Colin Cullis with Business Unusual this evening. And Colin, I saw you posted another one of your surveys this evening, but we've been hearing about smart homes for a very long time. How a fridge would magically WhatsApp the shop to order milk if ours was going sour or running out, and how our automatic vacuum cleaner would clean the house if the cat shed some fur on the floor, all thanks to technology. Personally, I'm just happy that my house has stopped leaking, but that's me. The high-tech home, has it really happened, or was it all just talk?
Bruce, like many of these things, it was all hype cycle to start with, and probably still is. The number of times smart gets associated with homes when they are certainly not smart, I think is starting to approach that tipping point, certainly in terms of cost, certainly in terms of ease. So this evening, it was simply an exploration to say, if you were considering it, how useful might it be? And the other consideration, I must say, I happen to see stage 11 trending today on Twitter. And rather than assuming it to be anything else other than Eskom falling off a cliff, it was in fact the Tour de France. But that's kind of the reason. You want to say, how do you protect yourself from this stuff?
And our own paranoia as well.
Yeah.
Stage load shedding, it's when you have to go to the power station and hand coal in so that they, you know, your own coal supply so that they can generate you some power, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not just a smart home that can turn your lights on and off for you. It's a smart home because your lights will stay on even when Eskom isn't. So it's those sort of elements that I wanted to take a look at. And the final element actually does go back to Eskom. And in some respects, maybe even a new business line for Eskom for making the grid smart, which will allow all of our homes to become smarter whether we want it or not. But to start is a little bit of a history. And I imagine for a lot of people, the way they control most things in their home in the past was with your voice. You simply shouted at someone to do something for you. I suppose for many people, that is still a good plan B. If you were particularly wealthy or an aristocrat of some sort, you rang some little bell and a little person would appear and have to do your bidding for you. But we started clicking remotes for the first time in the 50s. In 1955, the original TV remote was created. It used sound, ultrasound though, not something we could hear. And this clicker, which actually for many people, they still sometimes refer to remotes as clickers because they actually did make that sound, could turn your TV on or off, turn the sound on or off, or change the channel. That was it. Nothing like you can do today. And then we started adding more remotes. These ones used light infrared particularly. And then we made it all one remote, your phone, using Wi-Fi. And now we're back to using your voice again, which controls the remote that uses the Wi-Fi. Now, you might think, well, I don't bother with that. In fact, that poll that I did run earlier this evening was just to ask, have you gone smart? And two-thirds said, I turn my own lights on, which is not unexpected. I'm kind of impressed that a third of people had said they're doing something else. But the options were, I have a smart speaker, which is, I kind of think, this sort of gateway to you going down the rabbit hole that is home automation, or the absolute nerded out ones, and a full 22% came back with the answer being, hey Siri, answer poll. Because once you start getting used to talking to those little devices and have them do things around the house for you, pretty soon you find out that that's all you wind up doing. And we did discuss, actually it was some years ago now, about what the impact might be, particularly on children, when they're giving commands to smart speakers all the time. And the question was, should we maintain, you know, etiquette and politeness? Should
yes.
we say please and thank you?
Should you say please?
Right,
I found myself saying please to Siri today, by the way. I was looking for a phone number and I said please. I went, idiot. And Siri's response was, I don't like what you say or whatever, because I'd called Siri an idiot. Well, Siri thought I called her an idiot. She's not that smart, clearly.
Well, true, but they have built in those bits to respond specifically when you do say please or thank you. They will acknowledge it. And if you are particularly nasty, they will also sort of call you out or sometimes not respond in the way you expected. So it's a good thing to keep us coached. And I would argue the politeness is something we do as humans. It doesn't matter that we're speaking to a machine. It's something we should do as humans. But let me run through a little checkbox and see how converted you are. Because a lot of people think they're not into automation without realizing it's just a form of automation they use. So if you use a remote to control your TV or videos, DVDs these days, or just the DSTV sound systems, etc., tick the boxes. If you control your entry, your front gate with a button, well, tick the box. If your alarm is on a remote, tick the box. Possibly you started switching to lights, maybe appliances, and certainly air cons and fans were the first, but maybe you get other things connected. If you control security cameras, or now when you want to go completely full tilt crazy, you'll have curtains and everything else being controlled with remotes except your kids. And the reasons for not having these things done is that they were prohibitively expensive. They remain quite expensive, but the cost now, particularly if you're building a place or looking to re-kit out a home, then the cost of buying something that is smart is starting to approach the costs of having to convert the old ones or buying older tech, because the bulbs, let's just use lights as an example, we went from using incandescent bulbs to these CFLs, and now they're LEDs. They last a long time, they are dimmable, and the smart bulbs are not just dimmable, but they can change colors. Something that was a bit fiddly to do with a switch, but when you make them voice enabled, or you can use it via your phone, then creating scenes, they call them, or routines, allow you to convert the lights to give you all sorts of different settings. So perhaps in your lounge where your TV is and you want to watch TV, you either have the lights on or off or possibly dim them a little bit. But perhaps the best viewing for you is when you set the lights a little low and give it sort of a red glow. Or maybe a green glow, if that's what you prefer. But while you're having dinner, you'd prefer to have a nice warm yellow glow or something. So these are the kind of things you can do. They're not necessary, but once you start using them, you do get used to them. And then the next one that comes along is the smart speaker. And I think for anybody now, the prices of an Alexa or the Google, or if you want to pay the top dollar, the Apple stuff is amazing, but it is the premium end of the range. You really will do well to get yourself one of those things. Privacy concerns notwithstanding, most of them have switches and you can simply turn them off if you feel you don't want them listening to you all the time. But I think there have been so many speakers being used and they've been listened for so long that the number of actual privacy incidents versus the number of times they're simply being used would say that unless you are very sensitive or are discussing things that really you shouldn't be talking about or might wind up in the Zondo Commission, you're fine to talk in front of these things. And again, the challenge was in the past that you'd buy a set of lights and the set of lights needed their own app. And then maybe you've got a little security camera or a little baby monitor or something. It needed its own app. And then you got a smart speaker and it didn't control any of those things. So that was the challenge in the past. But it's now getting to the point that once you've decided on your smart speaker, then just make sure that you buy the bulbs or the camera remotes or any appliance or smart plugs or anything else, even air cons these days, that'll integrate in with that.
There is nothing more frustrating than having seven generations of technology which operate at different levels of instinctiveness, and then you have to reset something because the battery pack didn't work when there was load shedding, and you can't find the manual anymore, and so you sit and you struggle because what was intuitive 6 or 7 years ago just isn't intuitive anymore, and it's enough to drive you mad. So I'm delighted that there's some standardization coming through.
There is, although I think for most people, the best tipping point should happen is don't worry about the technology, don't even worry about the cost. Wait until you have a child that's about 10 years old. That's the point at which you invest in the stuff, because then it'll all just work. They will take care of it for you. That's the real deal. And what it was based on is, of course, the quality of our routers. Now, that is usually something that's stuck somewhere in your house. You're not 100% sure where it is or even what it actually does. But the thing that does hold you back is if your router is a pretty basic one, because remember, you're getting all these additional devices, and it's quite mind-blowing sometimes to think that there's 20, 30 devices all connected to this router trying to get information off of the internet. So the move has been from the regular routers to these things called mesh Wi-Fi routers. And effectively, you put these little boxes that are very discreet in a couple of places around the house. They connect to each other and can manage a lot more devices. And rather than the old routers, which you basically need an IT degree to fathom out how to use the settings, you now have, a little app on your phone, and it'll tell you who's connected, whether or not you want to prioritize who can get access and how much. So if there's a child using an iPad, you can simply say that iPad can only use the internet from this time to this time, and possibly even throttle how much they use. Or even if you want to, say this is how long they can spend on TikTok, or they can't spend time on TikTok at all, but they can go and watch something on YouTube. And with that sort of level of control, easy control, I do think we start reaching the point now where it's a good idea. And then at that point, I'm going to shift to where the smarter grid thing comes from. And I was intrigued by a startup home developer in the UK called Ciro that is looking to do development work for municipalities that effectively take or create homes that'll be carbon neutral. That's their step one thing. And so the principal things are cut down on heating costs by making the homes much better for insulation. And for example, one element for that is using borehole exchangers. So rather than just digging a borehole to try and get a little extra water for the garden, they sink a pipe down into the ground deep enough that by circulating water, the Earth's temperature at a certain depth, it's a good 10 stories down, is very consistent. So when you need to heat the house up, you use the heat from underground and add it to your home. When you want to cool the house down, you send the heat down into the ground and sort of basically stick it in there during the winter months. And that is a very cost-effective way, because rather than using heating elements and fans, it's just using a pump to circulate water and then concentrating it. But the other element that it has is, rather than them building your house with a fiber internet connection, they build a second fiber internet connection specifically to the grid. So Eskom would almost be, rather than Telkom, the people most likely to want to have a fiber connection to your home, because it'll start controlling the appliances in your home. And this might sound like a very novel thing, but Eskom has already done this. One, they were very instrumental in getting us to switch from incandescent to CFL bulbs back in 2008, when they simply said that will help reduce the amount of power required. But they also had, in very many municipalities, these ripple relays inserted, effectively a smart switch attached to your geyser, so that when the power demand was increasing, they could send a message across the entire grid network and tell geysers to turn off. They couldn't really tell them to turn on. They couldn't tell them, you know, that it's the best time to turn on at this time of the night. They could simply tell them when to turn off. But these days, that has improved to the point where they can actually turn things on and off depending. So if you imagine, you know, smart fridges or smart washing machines, you want to do the washing. You don't have to do the washing during the peaks. So you simply put your washing on and click go. The grid will tell the washing machine, now is a good time when you're not using much electricity. In fact, I might even give you the electricity at a lower price. And so where you can do that, have it, you know, do those things. This company is also building solar, but in the UK, you'd imagine they're not relying on it too much. What they're rather looking to do is build better battery storage. And I really like the idea of taking the modular batteries, which are getting better and better, into each and every home, because effectively what they become is a mini store for a utility. So whether that be in a municipality or something like Eskom, they will charge those batteries because they control them, and then draw on those batteries when they need it from the grid. Rather than having to put on these open cycle gas turbines, they simply draw from those batteries. And as South Africa, I assume, will switch to using more electric cars, and those cars are typically parked in your garage overnight, plugged into the network, they're large batteries. So charge the cars overnight, and during the morning peak, rather than having to boot up a whole bunch of extra power stations, you simply drain the batteries of the cars and the homes to balance out the peak. Now the renewables that are running during the day can also supply that energy and push it back into those batteries. Again, giving you a super cheap deal if you're willing to do it, and you get maybe a preferential price for getting it out. And there's a crowd called the Sun Exchange, which effectively go and prospect for projects, a lot of them for things like schools, and they will then have investors say, I'll pay or I'll invest in the payment for building the actual infrastructure, and then rely on getting a return from the school that will pay for electricity from solar at a cheaper rate than the electricity rates, and you get your return over time. So if Eskom were to partner with investors and say, we're looking to build a massive grid-based storage, home-based grid storage for batteries, you don't have to pay the money up front. You basically get on a lease agreement. You get the benefits. You don't have to control it. Eskom gets to turn them on and do all the clever management. It's kind of a win-win. It's also a bit of utopia. I don't see it happening any time now, when 480 billion rand in debt and too many power stations still need to be fixed. But there is the potential for a future that when we get this right, the future certainly can look a lot more rosy and a lot less dependent on carbon.
How do we ensure that I don't lose my phone? Because when I'm running everything from an app and it's on my phone, I am doomed. My smart home doesn't in any way compensate for the dumb owner.
There's one thing worse than losing your phone, Bruce, in the future. It's losing your voice.
What? That's horrendous. Imagine not being able to give instructions. Colin Cullis with Business Unusual. You lose your voice shouting for somebody to bring you your phone. That's possibly the double whammy of the future. But wow, I mean, it's so fascinating. It is so interesting, the way in which the world is moving. Have you got a smart speaker? Do you speak to it nicely? Do you give it instructions? Do you ask it to do things? Did you start off politely and now you just go, Alexa, buy milk? And Alexa just does it because that's what Alexa is trained to do. And has it changed your relationship with people in your family? Do you speak to people in your family differently? I suspect the downside consequence of these things is that social niceties may suffer.